Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. Producers' prices have risen sharply. The index reported this morning by the Labor Department shows they went up 1.3% in January, the largest monthly increase in 4 years. The index reflects the price that producers of materials and products charge wholesalers, so consumers will feel the impact later on. The Labor Department says that in January alone, the costs of beef and veal went up 13%, and there were sharp jumps also in gasoline, fuel oil, cosmetics, tobacco, automobiles, tires, and machinery. Mehdi Bazargan calls it phase two of the revolution, and this morning the man selected by Ayatollah Khomeini to be provisional prime minister of Iran addressed 100,000 Khomeini supporters to tell them about it. CBS News correspondent Richard Wagner reports from Tehran.
Bazargan's speech was billed as a spelling out of the program of the new government, but he mentioned few specifics other than saying, to great applause, that the general strike which has gripped Iran for months will continue. He said the two greatest problems facing this country are the army and the government of Shahpur Bakhtiar, which Bazargan says is illegal. Without mentioning the United States by name, but in a clear reference, he said never again can the army of Iran be permitted to fall under the influence of a foreign power. He said anyone who's waiting for the return of the Shah can stop waiting, because the Shah can never come back. Without spelling out how, he said a transfer of power must take place. Then the new government would conduct a referendum on a new constitution and an election for new members of parliament. The speech was well received by the adherents of the revolution, but the country must wait a while longer for specific details of the reorganization of Iran into an Islamic republic. Richard Wagner, CBS News, Tehran.
On the other side of Tehran, an estimated 1,500 followers of the Shah staged a demonstration in support of the absent monarch, and they clashed with bands of youths loyal to Khomeini. Troops broke it up. Secretary of Defense Harold Brown this morning begins a 9-day trip to Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel, and Egypt. We'll hear about it from CBS News Pentagon correspondent Ike Pappas.
Secretary Brown's mission is twofold: to assure the Saudis that the United States intends to play a continuing influential role in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf areas, despite the fact that U.S. pressure was unable to keep the Shah of Iran in power. The Saudis have been shaken by events in neighboring Iran and want assurances that the United States will not waver in the face of growing Soviet influence in the Persian Gulf area. There is the possibility also that Saudi Arabia, already one of the United States' biggest arms customers, may be offered even more weapons to take up the defensive slack created by the Iranian situation. The second major task facing Secretary Brown is to try to stir support among Saudi and Jordanian leaders for the renewed effort to gain a Middle East peace agreement between Israel and Egypt. So far, the Saudis have shown only lukewarm interest in proposed new high-level talks, and Jordan's King Hussein has said flatly he doesn't intend to assist in any proposed peace plan that might involve his country. Brown will meet with Hussein on the second leg of his journey and intends to see Israeli Prime Minister Begin and Egyptian President Sadat as well. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Washington.
Yesterday, Sadat agreed to the American proposal for resumption of the Middle East peace talks later this month at the ministerial level. Israel's response is expected this weekend. In recent weeks, China has assembled large military forces near the frontier with Vietnam. And CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kao reports that the question being asked in official Washington is, why?
According to U.S. intelligence, the Chinese military buildup along the Vietnam border continues. It's estimated there are now more than 100,000 Chinese troops there, along with about 200 MiG-jet fighter planes and 600 tanks. A force potent and large enough, officials believe, to deliver a punishing blow to Vietnam. And that very theme of punishing Vietnam apparently cropped up in all of Chinese Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping's private talks since leaving the United States and returning to China. U.S. officials are genuinely divided, however, about Deng's real intentions, some thinking Peking will take military action against Vietnam, others feeling this buildup is designed primarily to frighten Vietnam. Perhaps as a kind of deliberate counterstep, the Russians have moved a 15-ship task force into the South China Sea, the first time they've concentrated this many ships in that area. It's believed the ships are there primarily to gather intelligence on the Chinese buildup. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
President Carter's timetable for normalization of relations with China seems to be coming unstuck as Congress tries to establish security guarantees for Taiwan. The administration agreed with China on March 1st as the date for exchange of ambassadors and has been hoping that legislation would be approved by then, placing U.S. relations with the nationalist Chinese on an unofficial footing. But yesterday, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee delayed action on drafting a bill until February 20th, and this means that congressional approval by March 1st is almost out of the question. And Republican Senator Jesse Helms of North Carolina says he'll try to block Senate confirmation of Leonard Woodcock as ambassador to Peking until the Taiwan dispute is settled. The industrial turmoil now plaguing Great Britain last night prompted Prime Minister James Callaghan to grant a broadcast interview, his first in several months. Susan Peterson reports what he said.
In the interview at 10 Downing Street, Callaghan was especially critical of members of NUPE, the National Union of Public Employees, who have been staging strikes and walkouts at hundreds of hospitals. The Prime Minister admitted his government had misjudged the level of wage demands in this country in trying to keep pay raises down to 5%. But he said it was determined to keep those wage demands below 10%. We can just scrape by, he said, at 8.8, but the realistic figure is the one the country can afford. This morning, there appears to be some hope for Britain's winter of industrial discontent. Factory by factory, thousands of car workers at state-owned British Leyland are rejecting demands by their shop stewards for an immediate strike to shut down car production. Susan Peterson, CBS News, London.
About one-third of the New Orleans police force is on strike this morning. More than 400 officers walked off the job last night after a union rally at which their leaders told them Mayor Ernest Morial would not recognize the police association and would not negotiate with them for a new contract. Gary Mihalik of station WWL-TV takes it from there.
The mayor has refused comment but is going to court this morning to get an injunction against the strike. Overnight, there have been scattered incidents of harassment. The lights and sirens of unused police cars turned on while they were parked outside district stations. The National Guard is on standby. State police have stepped up their patrols of the city, and more troopers are on the way from the other parts of Louisiana. It's hard to say how many policemen will eventually join the picket lines because there are a number of unions representing officers. But the one with the biggest membership is the one on strike. For now, the city is quiet, and officials say they'll be able to control things with the manpower available. But the strikers say more policemen will join them as the day progresses. Gary Mihalik for CBS News, New Orleans.
The walkout comes just a week before the start of the New Orleans carnival season. The dangerously contaminated Love Canal area of Niagara Falls, New York, is still causing problems. Gary Shepard reports the latest.
New York State health officials have recommended that pregnant women and children under the age of 2 who are still living only a few blocks from the Love Canal moved out because of the danger to their health from toxic chemicals. At a meeting here last night, New York State Health Commissioner Dr. David Axelrod explained the reasons for his decision.
We found that there was indeed an increase in risk for the fetus. That is, that there was a small but significant risk, higher than would be anticipated for those living in the wet areas. And these risks were manifested by increases of approximately twofold in congenital malformations, in spontaneous abortions, and in an increase in low birth weight infants.
Only 30 families in the expanded area of contamination are affected by the relocation proposal, and that leaves some 220 others who want to move away but can't sell their homes because there are no buyers. Last August, New York State purchased the homes of 235 families who live directly adjacent to the old chemical dump. But at last night's meeting, officials said they have no plans to buy any more. Gary Shepard, CBS News, Niagara Falls, New York.
The price of gold in Western Europe dropped markedly today from yesterday's record high of $254 an ounce. It's quoted in London now at $243.75 an ounce, and a bit lower than that in Zurich. The dollar rose today in Tokyo and strengthened on some of the European exchanges, declining in others.